Today on the 21st Show, movie critic and Champaign-Urbana native Roger Ebert started an annual film festival in his hometown. That was back in 1999. Now, Ebert Fest is coming to an end, at least in its current form. We'll talk with co-founder and host Chaz Ebert about its history, the final festival this weekend, and the future of Ebert Fest. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's coming up today on the 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WNIJ in Rockford DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, news. Public Media. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. In 1999, Roger Ebert was already an immensely successful film critic. He'd been writing for the Chicago Sun-Times for more than three decades. On TV, he'd been hosting a review show for almost a quarter century, mostly with Chicago Tribune movie critic Gene Siskel. But on the eve of the 21st century, Roger added another accomplishment to his legacy. Founder and host of a film festival in his hometown, Champaign-Urbana. At the time, he wrote, "Every movie lover has shared the melancholy experience of finding a film to truly love, and then discovering that most people have never heard of it. When I was asked by the College of Communications to host a film festival at the University of Illinois, my first thought was of such films. There are countless festivals devoted to the premieres of new films, but none dedicated to taking a second look at wonderful films that, for one reason or another, haven't yet found the audiences they deserve." The event, once known as Roger Ebert's Overlooked Film Festival, soon found its audience. Ebert Fest, as it came to be known, has continued for more than a quarter century in Champaign, even after the death of its namesake in 2013. But then, last September, the University of Illinois and festival management announced that the festival held earlier in 2025 would be the last. And that turned out not to be the case. Ebert Fest is returning to Champaign's Virginia Theater for One Last Dance, as it's being billed, this weekend, the 17th and 18th of April. For the hour today, we're going to talk about the history of Ebert Fest, some of its most memorable moments, the upcoming event in Champaign, and its legacy and potential future. Chaz Ebert has had a front row seat to all of it. She and Roger were married for 20 years and were also business partners, co-founding RogerEbert.com, working on television projects, and, of course, creating Ebert Fest. She's with us today. Chaz Ebert, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Well, thank you, Brian. It's great to be back here.
And we're also joined by Nate Cohn, who's had a close-up view of Ebert Fest. He's directed it since the first event back in 1999. Nate, welcome to you as well.
Great to be with you.
And listeners, you can join us throughout the hour today by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. We want to know how you experience the movies in 2026. Are you still going to the theater? Do you prefer watching at home? Maybe you've been to Ebert Fest in the past. What memories do you have of it? And what do you think is Roger Ebert's legacy? 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. All right, Chaz, again, as I mentioned, by the late 1990s, Roger's already a very famous film critic, arguably the most famous film critic. What brought about the idea for him to found and host a film festival?
Well, you mentioned that he had gone to the University of Illinois Cyberfest, and I think it was probably, Nate, I think you were a professor at Were you a professor at Illinois when that happened?
I wasn't a professor, but they asked me to help produce Cyberfest. This was in 1997. Mm-hmm. Cyberfest being the birthday party for HAL, the computer from 2001.
If you remember, I was an undergrad at the time. I remember it well. It was a big deal on campus that spring, yes.
Computer said he was born in Urbana. Did he say Urbana? I was born in Urbana, Illinois.
Yeah, in 1997.
1990, not, oh, 1999, I thought. Anyway, okay.
97, yeah.
Okay.
So
Well,
that,
anyway,
yeah, go
so
ahead.
after Cyberfest, it was, Roger thought that that was fun, and I think they, were talking to Arthur C. Clarke and Keir Dilley and others. I'm going to get a little this mixed up because we did end up showing 2001 at Ebert as well, and so the university invited him back to do another film festival, and we talked about it, and we talked about the ethics of a film critic not doing talking about movies that he had not seen. He did not want to be a shield for the studios. He had very high ethics, and he said, "What I will do is I don't want to do anything that I don't really believe, but I would like to talk about films that maybe haven't gotten as much acclaim as they should have." And that's how we came up with the overlooked film festivals, talking about either films or genres that had been overlooked, or formats such as, black and white movies, silent movies, 70 millimeter projected movies. So that was exciting to think that we could do something in the Virginia Theater on that giant, giant stage and show people something that you don't get to see every day.
So Nate, say a little more than we did just there about Cyberfest, about how you came to be involved in this ongoing project.
Well, I just got my PhD at Illinois in 95, and I was just hanging around teaching courses in the English department, and they knew I the dean of the College of Communications at that time knew I had a background in producing feature films, and so they asked me to help produce this festival. And we, as Chaz says, we invited Roger down, and the Virginia Theater had been shuttered for about a decade. It was on the verge of being torn down, and we went into it, and we discovered that the 70 millimeter projectors were still in the booth.
Yes.
They built the booth around the projectors. So we brought in James Bond from Chicago, and he refurbished the projectors, and we opened the theater, showed the film in there for, and showed 2001 in there. Roger introduced the film. Roger did a Q&A afterwards, and it sort of became the model for the festival.
Well, they
Cyberfest also.
also, I'm sorry, I was going to say something that was really exciting too. We also discovered that they still had Todd AO ability to project Todd AO projection, which was an old method, but is really saturated color and to show something like Donald O'Connor coming and showing Singing in the Rain and dancing all around and so many things that most theaters in the country did not have the ability to do. Oh, I'm
Yeah.
so sorry. The telephone is ringing.
Oh,
Please
that's all right.
hang
We
the
can
line.
hardly hear it. Zoom does a good
Okay.
job of filtering that out. So, Nate, I
Yeah.
think for people who aren't as steeped in the, the history and technology of cinema, 70 millimeter, this may be, there are people out there who maybe don't really realize how film projection has evolved. So talk about that. Talk about at the time, I guess 35 millimeter was dominant. Now it's primarily digital. Talk about what it means to show a film in 70 millimeter.
Well, there were 70 millimeter produces a spectacular image, and the films that were generally shot in 70 millimeter were large films, films
Lawrence of
that
Arabia.
had yeah,
Lawrence of
Lawrence,
Arabia.
we showed Lawrence of Arabia in 70
And
millimeter at the Virginia Theater. You could see almost even the specks of sand. You could see everything on the there's also another film that we showed. It's a French film, Monsieur,
oh
not Monsieur, yeah, what is it? Well,
no,
anyway,
it's playtime.
Playtime,
Playtime.
Jacques
It's a
Tati, yes. And you could see so many things. People who saw it only in a smaller format missed a lot of the things on the edges. There were so many things that the filmmaker had little scenes going on that you missed if you didn't see it on the big screen in 70 millimeter.
And if you look at 2001, which was shot in 70 millimeter, if you watch it at home or you watch it on DVD or Blu-ray or something like that, it's slow, and you can't figure out why Kubrick was holding the shot so long. And the reason was that because of the 70 millimeter, you could look at different portions. He wanted you to look at different portions of the frame, like you look at a still photograph or a still painting. So you look at the Earth down in the right corner, and up in the left corner, you have the spaceship going out. And when you see the film projected in 70 millimeter in the Virginia Theater, for example, it's not slow. Everything holds your attention, and that's what 70 millimeter does for you. We showed about a dozen true 70 millimeter films, and then we discovered we ran out of 70 millimeter films that we could show. And so we started showing films.
We used to like to open Ebert Fest with a 70 millimeter film, and then we ran out of 70 millimeter films to show. I think we had shown them all. There is another one though that I think that we've missed that we need to go back and take a look at. But I forgot, this is The Last Dance. We're not gonna do that. Oh my God. Okay. After 27 years, everything has a cycle, and everything, you know, things begin and everything has an ending. And I guess this is our ending, but there are so many things that I think we still could do. And there is one film that I was wishing we would be able to show the audience this time, but our roster was too full. So anyway.
We can come back to that maybe a little bit. So let's talk about let me remind listeners first, this is the 21st show. We are talking about Ebert Fest, which is this weekend in Champaign. It's the last one. At least that's what we've been told. The last Ebert Fest, which was founded in 1999. We're talking about it with Chaz Ebert, who, of course, was Roger Ebert's life and also business partner, founded this as well as other ventures he was involved in, and Nate Cohn, director of Ebert Fest since 1999. And if you want to join us today, 800-222-9455. So we were talking before about how this was the overlooked film festival. Eventually that comes out of the title. How has programming the festival evolved over time? And Nate, I'll start with you.
I'll tell you a quick story about how the word overlooked came out of the title of the festival. We wanted to show a film that was directed by Mike Nichols, and we invited him to the festival, and he said, "I'm not overlooked, I'm not coming." And and so we decided it's probably a good idea to shorten the title of the festival. As far as the selection of the films, it really hasn't changed that much. Roger was alive, he made the final decision on all the films that were shown. We don't accept any submissions. In the early years of the festival, Chaz, Roger, and I would discuss. We'd each draw up kind of lists of films, and we'd discuss them, and Roger would make the final decisions as to which 12 or 14 films we showed. Now Chaz and I sort of do the same thing. We each come up with films that we think would be good to show in the festival, films that we remember from the past, films that were made a long time ago but had some new resonance with the zeitgeist of the moment. Or there were films from Roger's list of great movies. So it's a pretty random and eclectic way to choose films, but we always seem to come up with a list that the audience enjoys.
And the other thing about the overlooked name is, you know, we did hear from some other filmmakers who said, we don't like the idea of thinking that our films are going to be overlooked or were overlooked. And at the time, we were not showing only movies that were overlooked. There could be something that had been a blockbuster that we were showing, and we said that, okay, let's take the overlooked out of the name. And some people thought that the overlooked referred back more to The Shining, the Overlooked Motel. And there is actually another film festival that I think has Overlooked in its name, and I think that's in St. Louis. So, but Overlooked did not serve us anymore. And just eventually, we just started calling the film festival Ebert Fest, and that name stuck.
Absolutely. Yeah, I guess it's hard to argue that Lawrence of Arabia and 2001 were overlooked. All right, let me share. We asked members of our texting group about their memories of Ebert Fest and the man himself. You can join that, by the way, by sending the word talk to 217-803-0730. Karen in Champaign says, I have a cookbook that Roger Ebert wrote, The Pot and How to Use It. I love this book, even in my 60s. She goes on to say, the films that I have seen at the Ebert Fests of the past stick with me for decades. He had excellent taste and was an excellent curator. The talkback is one of the best aspects of any film festival. The talkback brings a higher level to sharing a film together. She says, Roger Ebert valued the nurturing of empathy in human beings. He believed that the hearing of our own stories and other people's stories through films creates a better sense of community. There is no better legacy that a human can leave than stirring the pot so that empathy bubbles up. Thanks for that message, Karen. We are talking about the last Ebert Fest today with two people who have been involved with it throughout its history. Chaz Ebert, Roger's longtime wife and co-founder and host of the festival, and Nate Cohn, the director of Ebert Fest, going back to the first one in 1999. You can join us today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. If you're on the line, please stay on. We need to take a break. We'll get to some calls when we come back. More with Chaz Ebert and Nate Cohn ahead of this weekend's final Ebert Fest. This is the 21st show. Stay with us. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about Ebert Fest going back from 1999 until 2026, when we are told this is the final Ebert Fest, the last dance, as it's being called. We're talking about that with Nate Cohn, who has been a director of Ebert Fest since 1999, and Chaz Ebert, co-host and co-founder of the festival with Roger, as well as many other ventures. She was, of course, married to Roger for 20 years. 800-222-9455, if you want to join us today. 800-222-9455. Chaz, before the break, I shared that text message from Karen in Champaign about Roger's The Pot and How to Use It book.
Yes, his cookbook.
Yes, you wanted to,
he
you
was
wanted to
so
come back to that.
Proud, he was so proud of that cookbook. That was one of the things, I mean, even with his movie career and everything else that he had done, his cookbook was one of the things he was most proud of because it became a bestseller, first of all, in Hawaii. And then I think it was translated into Japanese and maybe even Chinese. And so he was really proud of The Pot and How to Use It. And we used to actually take a one crock pot or something to the film festival and cook some of the recipes when we could in between going to the movies down in Champaign. So
what a great story. And he did love that. It was a rice cooker, if I'm remembering correctly.
It was a rice cooker, that's right.
Yeah, yeah, amazing. Let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. We have Susan calling from Elgin on line one. Susan, thanks for calling in.
Hey there. I just wanted to make the comment that I've been a film fan my whole life. I mean, since I was very, very little, and I knew old Hollywood and all the old movies. But watching Roger's reviews on television and reading them in our newspaper, boy, it gave me a completely different take on how to think about film and it opened up a lot of films for me that I wouldn't have otherwise known about, because I lived in Des Moines, Iowa, so we're talking 1970s. But anything from Amarcord to Fitzcarraldo to, you know, just My Dinner with Andre, all those films were films that I might not have otherwise discovered if it hadn't been for Roger.
100%. Susan, thanks so much for sharing that memory. I appreciate it. Chaz, I imagine that's something you hear a lot from people about their introduction to film through his writing.
Yes, I do. I hear that a lot. And one of the things that we that's been, if you notice in the last few years, there's been a little more of a retro look at films. And so some films from the past have come back into theaters, and which makes people go to the website to look for Roger's review of it. And now someone has approached us with something, sort of a novel way to get some of Roger's reviews out in a different way that we are considering. But it's something that's not fully confirmed yet, so
the little button on the rice cooker hasn't popped up yet. Okay.
That's right.
Well, I will stay tuned for that, because I've got a bunch of the great movies books and some of his other writing, so I look forward to hearing how that develops. I want to ask about some of your favorite memories from Ebertfest. There's one particular moment I'm going to start with. We're going to set this up the way you set it up at the 2013 festival with Tilda Swinton walking out on stage along with Chaz.
This is a woman of her word. Tilda promised you that we're going to do something that they do at her film festival and film events in Scotland. We're going to have an audience dance along this morning. She's serious. She is coming down into the aisles to get you to dance with her.
We're not dancing up here. We're coming down to dance with you, because if we dance up here, you're just going to sit and watch us and laugh, okay? So no observers allowed. Participants only.
Barry White, you're the first, the last, my everything. So obviously as a radio show, Chaz, we're missing a visual element here. Can you describe for me the scene as you experienced it, as you remember it?
Yes, Tilda Swinton was going to go on stage, but we had recently had loss in our family. Me with Roger, and Tilda's mother had passed recently, and we were both actually backstage crying. And we said, we can't go on stage crying. We have to do something to bring forth joy. And Tilda said, I know, we have a dance-a-thon at my film festival in Scotland. Why don't we do that? And I thought, that's great, you know? And so that's how that came about. And the audience loved it. It's still one of the things that people talk about the most, aside from the movies, dancing all around the Virginia Theater with Tilda Swinton.
You just have to Google it, Dance Ebertfest, Tilda Swinton, and you can see a video of it. At that particular festival, I told the folks that do a documentary about our festival every year, Shatterglass, that they should have 12 cameras covering that particular festival, because I knew it'd be something special. So we cut a video of that dance the night after it happened and put it up on social media, and it actually went viral. There were something like 30,000 views of it that first night. So that it's still up there, and I guess that's where you got the audio from that you just played.
Yeah, and we actually spoke with with someone from Shatterglass yesterday, and about his film that's going to be screening later this week at Ebertfest. And Nate, what are some other memories that stand out to you over the years? Some of your favorite moments.
One of the first memories was that of Donald O'Connor, coming with Singing in the Rain.
Yes.
He was not in great health. He was in a wheelchair, but he insisted on walking out on stage, that he wasn't going to go on stage in the wheelchair. And he gave us, Roger, the most wonderful interview about, because that Donald O'Connor was true old Hollywood. He was a real movie star. And it turned out to be his last public appearance before he passed away. So that always stays with me. And of course, the Tilda thing stays with me. But we've had so many fantastic guests over the years. I mean, it's just hard to keep track of them all.
You know, one of my memories is we kept going back and forth about whether we could show a movie that Roger had written called Beyond the Valley of the Dolls that was directed by Russ Meyer. And we finally said, yes, why not? It turned out to be a hit with the audience. But the thing that we never thought that we could do, we were able to get the band, the Strawberry Alarm Clock, to come play on stage. They had disbanded and they came back and reformed the group just to perform at Ebertfest. And I think they continued to tour after that. So that was a joyous, joyous time, having the Strawberry Alarm Clock.
How did
and
he
showing
come?
Beyond the Valley of the Dolls.
It's that among Ebert fans, that movie is sort of, I don't know if, I don't want to use the word notorious, but right, it certainly occupies
it's
some
a cult,
mind share.
It's a cult
yeah.
favorite.
And he did not go on to write many other movies in life. So how did he come to think of that?
No, he
film
did.
Over
no,
time?
Roger actually did write more movies. Some that we that may be a couple that may become Broadway plays. So he didn't produce them as movies, but he did write other movies.
Okay. Did he change the way he thought about that film and that experience over time?
He became very proud of it. I think at first he was, you know, people used to call Russ Meyer a soft horn master. But Roger said that when you analyzed Russ Meyer's films, and later a woman's group said that his films, the women were all take charge, and they were kind of in a way a feminist film, because the women were in charge and the women called the shots. And they actually started having film festivals where they were showing Russ Meyer films and women were talking about them. So yeah, Roger became, you know, he became just proud of the work that he did with that film.
Yeah.
That was Russ Meyer's first and only venture into so-called legitimate filmmaking, films financed by a major studio. That was, I believe, 20th Century
oh,
20th Fox.
Century. Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah. All right, go ahead. Go ahead, Chez, yeah.
No, I was going to say another one of my favorite moments is when the director Charles Lane brought his film Sidewalk Stories to us. And he was sort of becoming the character of like the little tramp. It was an homage to Charlie Chaplin finding a baby and what to do with someone who was, a homeless man on the street, but he found the baby and he had to take care of it. That was really a very poignant, poignant movie, and the audience loved it. And we loved having Charles Lane at Ebertfest with Sidewalk Stories.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking today with Chaz Ebert and Nate Cohn about Ebertfest. The Last Dance is this weekend at the Virginia Theater in Champaign, Illinois. Of course, it was founded by Roger Ebert in 1999. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. So Chaz,
Brian, excuse
go
me.
Ahead,
it was founded by Roger and Chaz Ebert.
Thank you, thank you,
that.
Thank you for the correction.
Yeah. I
don't want to erase
Roger's
you.
Wife. No, we actually co-founded
100%, and
yeah.
and RogerEbert.com and many other ventures. I definitely
yes.
don't want to write you out of that story. Well, let me
please
ask you.
Please don't, because women have been written out of history for far too long.
100%,
and it's time to stop.
So let me ask you about Champaign-Urbana. What does it mean to host the festival there at the Virginia Theater and not someplace like Chicago?
Well, I would like for Nate to answer that first, because that's also his hometown.
Yeah, I mean, this festival is, I always viewed it as Roger's gift to his hometown. Roger had a real love for Champaign-Urbana. If you read his book, Life Itself, you'll find extensive passages about his growing up in Champaign-Urbana. And it makes all the sense in the world. But back to something we were talking about earlier, one of the things he wanted to do with the festival is, as the caller said, is bring films to East Central Illinois that audiences there would never have had an opportunity to see, Fellini films and Herzog films. And then he wanted to introduce the community to these particular films. And he essentially introduced each film, and it was like a college classroom lecture on how to appreciate and understand the films that we were about to see. So it made the films far more enjoyable for the audiences. So back to Champaign-Urbana, I mean, Roger and I grew up about four blocks from each other, though he was slightly older than me. And we were in high school, at Urbana High School at the same time. He was a senior, I was a freshman, I believe. And he was at the school, he was everybody knew him. He was covering sports for the local newspaper. He was editor of the Echo, the Urbana High School paper. He was just always writing, always doing things. And I think he captured in Life Itself what growing up in Champaign-Urbana was really like. And it was, truthfully, he loved the town a whole lot more than I did.
Oh!
But I do, it's I mean, you know what the weather's like there.
Well, I like to quote Roger, how he started the book. He said, being born there, I was born in the center of the universe, and I've had good fortune for all my days. I just love that. I loved his writing so much. And he could romanticize almost any situation, but he talked about his childhood and how fortunate he was to be born there, and that as he grew older, to have a resource like the University of Illinois in his town. At one time, he thought that he would go to Harvard, and his parents said, boy, we don't have that kind of money for you to go to Harvard. It's a good thing you were born here in Urbana-Champaign, because you have the University of Illinois, and it's just as good as Harvard. So,
beautiful, beautiful. All right, let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're talking about Ebertfest, co-founded by my guest today, Chaz Ebert, along with her late husband, Roger Ebert, back in 1999. This is the last year for Ebertfest in Champaign-Urbana this weekend, April 17th and 18th. We'll have details on that on our website. We're also talking today with Nate Cohn, who's been director of Ebertfest since its founding in 1999. I want to share a message from a listener, Lloyd in Danville, sent us a text message. He says, Ebert's legacy will be the fact that whether or not a particular movie got good or bad reviews, if Ebert reviewed it, that meant it got reviewed by the most important critic of all times. Chaz has done a remarkable job at continuing his legacy. She deserves a tremendous amount of credit for that. My experience with movies today are by streaming. That's unfortunate because of the missed opportunity for socialization of people meeting at theaters. He, Ebert, was a great man with a clear vision. All right, we're going to talk more with Chaz Ebert and Nate Cohn when we come back about the last Ebertfest, which is happening this weekend again in Champaign-Urbana. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. This is the 21st show. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about Ebertfest. The last dance, the last version of Ebertfest is set for this weekend in Champaign, Urbana. We're talking about that with the co-founder of the festival, Chaz Ebert, who was also Roger's longtime partner in business and life, and Nate Cohn, who has been director of Ebertfest since 1999, when it was Roger Ebert's overlooked film festival. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. So, Chaz, last fall, the university and the Ebertfest team announced there would be no further events, at least not in Champaign-Urbana. We can get into what happened since that announcement, but why is it time to wind down? Why is it time for Ebertfest to come to an end?
Oh, I don't know. It's time because the university said it was time, and everything has a season. We just wanted to have a chance to do a proper farewell to all of the Ebertfest, we call them family, who've been coming over the years. There are so many people who have actually attended since the very first Ebertfest, and we even have one person who is our presenting sponsor this year, who actually started coming before, who first came to us and on a, one of the Ebert and Roper Film Festival at Sea. So it wasn't even Ebertfest. And then he started coming to Ebertfest, and he's now one of our presenting sponsors. I guess it's just everything has a season.
Hmm. Nate, how did people respond to the announcement?
They were not happy. We have a very loyal and enthusiastic family of fans. Mm-hmm. And we heard from a lot of them, which is why we decided to give it a proper conclusion.
Right.
We still do, but when Roger was alive, we would sell 1,000 passes to the festival within the first week before announcing any films at all. The tickets were sold because of Roger. And as Chaz says, many, many of those people who came to the first few festivals are still coming to this festival. So we just felt we owed it to them, and we owed it to ourselves, you know, to psychologically have a proper end to the festival.
Yeah.
And I have to say, Brian, I just want to say what a pleasure it has been working with Nate all of these years, because he's so easy to work with, and we both love movies. We both have a deep knowledge of movies. So even after Roger passed away in 2013, when Nate and I would get together and say, what do we want to show this time? We both had a broad sense of movies to offer. This year, it's going to be a little different. We're going to show some newer movies, one that was shot in the Champaign-Urbana area and the environs around it. And for that movie, the Auditorium Theater, the Auditorium, the Virginia Theater, is going to be filled. We've sold so many tickets for that, individual tickets as well as passes, that it's going to be great to be seeing the movie. And that's Chili Finger, starring, and John Goodman and Judy Greer will be there with us.
Yes, yeah, so we talked to one of the producers of that film yesterday as well. People can find that conversation at 21stshow.org. There's also the documentary about Roger and the Ebertfest called The Last Movie Critic. Nate, what are some of the other highlights people can see if they come out this weekend?
Well, the very first show at 9 a.m. on Friday morning is a low-budget independent film called Charlie Bird that is sponsored by the Alliance for Inclusion and Respect in Champaign. It's just a beautiful little independent film about a woman who's a music therapist in a hospital. and her interaction with one of the patients. The writer, producer, and star of the film, Samantha Smart, will be with us for that film. On that day at 11:25, we're showing Nuremberg, the film about the Nuremberg trials. And
Michael
Barker.
Going to be one, I just want to say, that's going to be one to see on that big, big screen. Nuremberg, the projection for that is going to be just absolutely stellar. And we'll have the director, James Vanderbilt. But one of the reasons we also wanted to have that movie is because Michael Barker, the co-president of Sony Pictures Classics, has been such a supporter of Ebertfest all of these years. And that was a movie that he presented at the, you know, for Oscar consideration this year, this last year. And he'll be there, Michael Barker.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I think we can get another caller in here who wants to talk about another memory of Roger and one of the films he championed. Doug is calling from Naperville. Doug, thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Brian. And I wanted to, Chaz, and to thank, lift up Rogers in the early 1990s for Hoop Dreams, the documentary of the two young men, Arthur and William, in Chicago from seventh, eighth grade through high school. Is a great contribution Roger made to us. And we just briefly add that, you know, Roger would say that the mark of a great film is when you care about its characters. And in the documentary, you really care about these two young men deeply. And be grateful also, Chaz, if you could please share thoughts on Roger's relationship with Gene Siskel. But thank you.
Thanks, Doug.
Well, thank you, Doug. You know, I have to tell you, almost every Friday, you know, at RogerEbert.com, we release our lists, our movie reviews every Friday, as do many other outlets. There's probably not a Friday that goes by that there's not some movie that I think, oh, what would Roger say about this one? And some movie that I think, I sure wish I could see Roger and Gene Siskel debated back and forth. The thing that I miss, their enthusiasm, because Roger, they so sincerely believed in what they were saying about the movies, and they were passionate about it. They didn't think that movies, yeah, they could be an entertainment. Movies were a part of life. Movies, they're talking about it was so visceral that it brought you into the conversation about movies, about life, about different lifestyles, about, you know, different ethnicities, just cultural things. I miss the passion that they brought to film criticism.
Yeah,
there are good, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah,
there
sure.
are other good movie critics around now. I'm not saying that. I don't want anybody to think that I'm saying that. But I do miss what Roger and Gene brought to it.
And you know, the Hoop Dreams was directed by Steve James, the Chicago documentarian. And he also he directed that beautiful documentary about Roger,
Life Itself.
Life Itself that we showed at the festival, I believe the year after Roger passed away.
Mm-hmm. Chaz, can you talk about? I mean, so many. Roger means so much to so many people as a public figure, as a writer. I mean, my own movie going was influenced by him. I was also influenced by him as a young newspaper man. I still remember, you know, some of the non-movie things he wrote about over time.
Yes.
You know, the way Macy's destroyed the Marshall Field's legacy in Chicago is one that stands out to me. Can you talk about those sharing? I mean, this is a man, this was your life partner, your business partner, about sharing him with so many other people. Is there a bittersweetness to that to you? How do you feel about that?
He contained multitudes, as he said, borrowing from Walt Whitman. He was very prolific, and he could sit and write. And somebody said that he wrote, that he thought at the speed of writing, that his thoughts were, his fingers could barely move to keep up with his thoughts. But he loved so many things, you know, writing about movies. He liked writing about theaters. What I'd like to do is collect a selection of his non-movie writings, just like when he was just incensed that Macy's was not going to use the Marshall Fields name, and he thought that that was going to take away something from the culture of downtown State Street. And there are so many other things that he wrote about that I would like to collect some of his non-movie writings and just publish them in a book. He was passionate about so many things. And because he sincerely cared. I think part of that is because he was an only child. And he said that he was surrounded by older people in his family. He had some cousins that he would see, maybe not as often as he wanted to, the younger cousins. So he was surrounded by older people. And I think that the way he thought and the way that he wanted to be connected with people, part of that stemmed from being an only child. And so when he married into my family, my large family, I mean, he was the center of, you know, he loved being the center of attention and being surrounded by a lot of people. And you could see that in his writing, in his appearances, a lot of things like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. He's well, a great guy. I will be first in line to pre-order that book if it does come to fruition. So please keep in touch about that. So we're coming to the end of our time together. Chaz and Nate, just briefly, maybe just a minute or so each. What do we lose as we are losing this experience of collective movie going, right? Movie theater attendance is down. It's been that way since the pandemic. Ebert Fest is another opportunity people are now not going to have, at least in central Illinois, to partake in films together. What are we losing? And Nate,
Let Nate answer the question primarily. However, what I want to say is, go to the movies. There are so many movies out that you need to see in a theater. It's great that people get to stream them at home. Sometimes people may not be able to afford going to see everything if they have a family, so many people in the family. Movie theaters try to do that by having maybe Tuesdays discount days. Go see them. It's such a great experience to see them on screen. The one thing that I want to tell you about Ebert Fest that I'm so excited about, we're having a play. It's called Siskel Ebert. Zach Mast is Roger, an uncanny performance. And Stephen Mitchell is Gene Siskel. That's one of the things that people are going to see this weekend. And it's going to be great.
Sounds great. Nate Cohn, just about a minute left. What are we losing with this collective extinguishing of the theater-going experience?
We're losing a lot. But all is not lost because the movie theaters still exist. Tom Rothman, who's the head of Sony, was just speaking. I read about it yesterday that how they are committed to the theatrical experience, and he chastised theater owners for the half hour of ads and trailers that go before each movie. The theater should just basically just show the movies, and that they're going to make films that are going to draw people into the theater. I mean, a lot of theater going now is really event based. So if you want to get people into the theater, you have to do something special in the theater, like we do at Eberfest, to have the talkbacks after each show. And that draws people in. You'll find a lot of directors now travel with their films and in smaller independent cinemas across the country. And that draws audiences or an actor from the film will appear with the film. If you're a producer and you make a film now, you really need to commit a year after the film's done to take it and make sure people see it.
Like a book.
And that's
tour
what
almost.
Festivals that's what festivals do for us as well.
Yeah. And they bring something people that together.
I'm afraid we have to end it there. We're out of time. I'm so sorry.
But I want to talk about the astronauts seeing Hail Mary and loving being talked about, a movie about astronauts at the time that they're in space. So
that is great. an amazing confluence. All right, Chaz Ebert, co-founder of EbertFest with Roger, and Nate Cohn, director of EbertFest since 1999. Thank you both for being with us, and Chaz, especially for talking with us so many times on Illinois Public Media over the years.
Thank you so much.
If you want to go, April 17th and 18th in Champaign-Urbana, we'll have full details on our website, 21stshow.org. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.